Thank you, Jerry and Joe. Always a pleasure, and we'll only get to do it one more time. It is crazy how quickly the time goes by. 161 down and one to go. The Blue Jays beat the Orioles 4-2. And we are Blue Jays talking it up across our network until the top of the hour, and then on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca until 8 o'clock. We will intersperse with some sound from John Gibbons and maybe from the Blue Jays clubhouse as well. And if we have time, we'll fill you in on the end-of-season poll results. We revealed in the pregame show the Blue Jays pitcher of the year, rookie of the year, and most pleasant surprise of the season, and maybe we'll give you a treat and we'll let you hear from them as we continue the program throughout this evening. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Don't call 0490. I don't know what you're going to get there, but probably won't be pleasant. This is our next-to-last Blue Jays talk this year, so let's do it upright. We'll start with Eddie in Fort Erie, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eddie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike, and I just want to say thank you for those kind words you said on Tim and Sid the other day.
No problem. I will not have them besmirch the good name of Eddie in Fort Erie.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that. Two things I wanted to talk about. First, J-Hab, you know what? He's really, pitched much better than I ever thought he could have this season, because he had a back injury in spring training, and then he had like that little problem in 2013 where he's like, I should have been the starter, it should be mine kind of thing, and he didn't take the ball and run with it. But I think next year the Blue Jays should bring him back, because you know what, he's really become better. But I just think that he should get a little bit better by not getting himself into trouble in the second inning. Like, he has a good first inning, and then he has a little bit of problem in the second inning a little bit, but he somehow finds his way out of it, which is a good thing. And the second thing I noticed was the third base for the Orioles today. I really noticed the Blue Jays were really hitting a lot of the ball, like a lot of the hits down the line, and I think that's going to be a weakness for the Orioles in the playoffs. I really think.
Well, I don't think you're going to see Alexi Casilla at third base for the Orioles in the playoffs. I don't know that you have to worry about that. But not having Manny Machado is going to hurt him. It's really hard to evaluate a team based on what they're doing 2 weeks after they've clinched a division title and when they have nowhere to go up or down in the standings. But this was Alexi Casilla's first start of the year, first appearance of the season for the Orioles. So he's not a guy that they're going to be counting on. You'll see Ryan Flaherty there. You'll see Kelly Johnson there. You'll see somebody else that I'm forgetting there for the Orioles. But I don't know that you need to worry about that. It's an interesting comment about Happ, and I'm looking it up now to see how he's done in the second inning. And the truth of the matter is, the second inning has been his best inning of the season. Outside the seventh, and he's only gotten to the seventh now 14 times, but in his 26 starts this year, Jay Happ has given up a grand total of 6 runs, including today, in the second inning. He came into this game with an ERA of 180 in the second inning. That'll go up a little bit because he did give up a run today. So, I guess the observation is that's recency effect more than anything else, and that's that has more to do with probably a couple of bad second innings that you've seen, but there haven't been that many. First inning, an ERA of 360, second inning, an ERA of 180, and third through fifth, they're all well over 4.5. So it's interesting. You take a look at those sorts of things and the feelings people get and to see whether they're right or wrong. I appreciate the call, Eddie.
Thank you.
I do think that the Blue Jays will pick up Jay Happ's option. But as we discussed yesterday on Blue Jays Talk, I'm wondering if Jay Happ, because he's only making $6.7 million next year, may actually bring you back more than either R.A. Dickey or Mark Burley might in trade in the off season. I mean, if you bring Happ and Dickey and Burley back, you got to fit them in with Stroman and Sanchez and Hutchison, and that's 6 starters. Obviously, we've been around here long enough and seen the pitching long enough to know that you never can be sure what you're going with in a rotation. But if they're going to move a guy, they might be able to. And obviously, you're not going to move Stroman, Hutchison, or Sanchez unless the return is crazy. But if they are going to move a guy, Happ might be the guy to move to get you your best possible return. He's only making a third the money that Burley is, half of what Dickey's making. And they've all only got 1 year left, although Dickey's got options for more. Blue Jays beat the Orioles 4-2. Ross in Toronto listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Ross.
Good evening, Mike. I just want to say two things that the Blue Jays may think that they did wrong this year was they weren't very good against teams underneath them, and in four-game series, they weren't very good. So maybe if they do that next year, we'll be in the playoffs. Another thing is congratulations to Casey. I think he's going to go to San Diego or Oakland next year. I think Kobe Rasmus will go to Boston because Boston's got that hole in center field. I don't think they'll worry about strikeouts. And I'll be at the game tomorrow. I'm going to be getting up early so I can get there early and get that hat. And, you know, I'm looking forward to next season because the pitching's going to be there. And we'll just see how good they'll do. I think they're going to make the playoffs next year.
Well, let's see what they do in the off season. I appreciate the call. This team has some work to do to get better, but they're not that far away. As much as people believe they're so far away from the playoffs, really, they're not. I mean, right now it's an 83-win team with a shot at an 84-win team, and 87 could very well make the playoffs. This was a team that on August 1st had a three-game lead in a wild card spot. As far as not doing so well against teams underneath them, I don't know. They were 11-8 against Tampa. They were 12-7 against Boston. 4-2 against the Indians. They did go 3-4 against Houston, 2-4 against Minnesota, and 2-5 against the White Sox. So if that's what you're referring to, yeah, they did not do well against those teams. But Boston, Tampa, Texas, they had a winning record against. Crappy teams in the AL Central seem to give them a bit of trouble this year. I don't know what their deal was in four-game series. I know that it's really tough to win a four-game series, to go 3-1. The most likely result in a four-game series is a split. And they played Tampa in four, and they split with them. They played the Angels in four, lost 3 out of 4. As we go down the list of the season, they had a four-game series against the Royals. They split that. Four-game series against the Orioles. They split that. So, you know, we're putting your hypothesis to the test right now. They had a four-game series against the Red Sox. They won 3 out of 4. Four-game series against Houston, which I'm sure is what stands out in your mind, them losing 3 out of 4. In that series, and we're already into September now, and the only four-game series they had in September was Seattle. They went, New York they went 1-3, and then Seattle they went 3-1. So it seems like the Blue Jays are pretty even in their four-game series this season. It looks like winning 2, losing 2, splitting 2, according to the rudimentary numbers that I just ran. So we'll throw that thesis out, as well as the not-so-good against teams beneath them. Really, what they didn't do well is win enough games. Plain and simple, and it'll be interesting to keep an eye where Casey Jansen goes, where Kolby Rasmus goes. I don't think anyone is going to be terribly keen on offering Kolby Rasmus a starting job this season. He's going to have to, he may even have to sign a minor league deal, and he's going to have to go out there and win a job next spring. So I don't see him necessarily being the starting center fielder for the Boston Red Sox or anything like that. And I can see Casey Jansen going to Southern California too, to the Dodgers, to the Angels, to the Padres, something like that. And I'm going to miss him. I really am. I mean, I haven't dealt with too many guys that I've enjoyed as much as Casey Jansen, both on the field and off. Blue Jays double up the Orioles 4-2 in the next to last game of the season. Aaron is in Australia. Aaron from Down Under, welcome aboard.
How you going, Mike?
Good. Where in Australia are you?
Sunshine Coast.
Lovely.
That's, north of Brisbane.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, I listen on the app, the Major League Baseball app.
Fantastic.
And I actually listen most days when I'm at work.
Yeah, I guess that would work out pretty well. Well, we're glad to have you along. What's doing?
Yeah. So I just want to talk about your the starting pitching.
Sure.
I'm very impressed with the 10 wins for 5 pitchers. And I think we really needed actually that guy to win 15 to 20. And the reason being is, like, if you got a guy who shut down like Clemens used to be, you could, like, stop those 5-game, 8-game flies. You know what I mean?
I do. I don't know that there are such things as 20-game winners. I mean, there's not going to be one in the American League this year. And if the Blue Jays had performed better, both Mark Burley and R.A. Dickey would have been 15-game winners this year, if not more. Pitchers don't really control that. I mean, I guess what you're talking about is you want a shutdown stud starting pitcher, a Roy Halladay type, on this team.
Yeah, we just need that one extra guy. And maybe next year Stroman will be that guy.
I think that's a lot to ask for someone in his first full season in the big leagues. But I mean, you know, you should be able to do it with a collection of decent enough starting pitching. Look at the Baltimore Orioles. You know, they've got 95 wins this year. They've won the division. They're going to the playoffs. They don't have that kind of starter.
Yeah. True.
Right. They, you know, they're.
Did Chris, any other teams get the 5-10 game winners, or is it just the Jays?
That one I don't know. I don't know. I know the Orioles have 3 of them. In Chen, Tillman, and Bud Norris. I don't know if anybody else has 5-10 game winners, and it shows depth from top to bottom. But yeah, there isn't a legit big time number one on this team. But, again, the Orioles are proving that you don't need one.
Yeah. We can do it with 5 next year.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
That'd
real
be swell.
Exciting team. Can't wait for next year.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. Glad to hear it. One hopes that the right changes will be made in the offseason. I don't think that you can bring this exact same group back. And, well, let's hope that Brett Laurie stays healthy all season next year. Let's hope that Edwin Encarnacion and Adam Lind don't miss 6 weeks each. Jose Bautista managed to stay healthy all year this year after he missed half a season each of the last 2 years. And Jose Reyes managed to stay healthy this season after he missed half the year last year. So there are a lot too many ifs just to bring the same group back and hope that simply by being healthy and having a whole year out of Marcus Stroman, you're going to be 5 games better. Could happen, but changes do need to be made, especially since you're not going to have your closer more than likely in Casey Jansen, and Melky Cabrera is probably not going to be back either. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. We'll let the network go at the top of the hour, but if you're on hold, stay on hold, because Blue Jays talk will continue on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and on sportsnet590.ca until 8 o'clock Eastern. Jays double up the O's, 4-2. It's a Honda postgame on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Reyes up here, popped to second, first time up. He rips one down to the third baseline, another base hit by Casilla. Around third, Tallis, and he scores. A double by Reyes, and the Blue Jays take a 2-1 lead.
And the Blue Jays would never relinquish that lead. They went on to a 4-2 win over the Baltimore Orioles in the next-to-last game of the season. They are now 83-78, and with a win tomorrow, would have a 10-game improvement over last year's 74-88 finish. Small consolation, I know, because this was a year that the Blue Jays really should have made the playoffs. And it's, you can't say that too often in the last 20 years, that they should have made it. Certainly the first time in this 21st century that they should have been a playoff team. And they are not. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Taking your calls to the top of the hour, then we'll hand things off to Roger Lajoie for Sportsnet tonight. We go to Joe in Mississauga. Joe, you're on Blue Jays Talk. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, when we look at the end of last year and we were looking at that season and saying that the starting pitching was brutal and that the relief corps was great and we had some heavy hitters there in the lineup,
yep.
We thought we had to have those starting pitchers. And in the end, you know, we look at this year, you reflect on, I mean, the starters, they didn't make many changes, but we have so much more to look forward to. Like, I think Cap's going to be better. We have Sanchez right from the beginning. We have Stroman right from the start. Cecil lost his fastball. This year he got it back. He looked lethal. So I think there's more to look forward to. Just hoping that the guys that aren't getting along with Gibbons, and I guess there's a couple there, I mean, Rasmus for sure, that AA deals, you know, makes the right deals and has the players that want to play for Gibbons. But I think we're looking more upbeat than we did at the end of last year, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know where you're getting the guys who don't get along with John Gibbons part of your call, but everything else makes sense.
Just from what I've heard, I've just heard that there's a few just from the press, from the sportscast, that there's a few there that you know, there's some differences.
I think you,
I don't know. I'm not in the
right
dressing room.
Exactly, and I think you need to be more. And this doesn't just apply to you, obviously. I think people need to be more
selective.
Well, you've got to consider the source a lot of the time before you believe things that you hear. So I know, I only know of one guy in that room who doesn't get along with John Gibbons, and it's not Colby Rasmus. But but I think that the other stuff is more important, more key to what the Blue Jays have done and need to do in the offseason. It really doesn't it has less to do with John Gibbons than it has to do with
full
year Stroman, like you said.
I think he's been a great manager this year.
Yeah, and I agree with you. But I mean, a full year of Marcus Stroman, hopefully a full year of Aaron Sanchez. Who knows what they're going to do with Jay Happ, but he's
a
terrific
lineup.
Option at the bottom of the rotation. And a bunch of guys who can hit the ball, but needs little fixes here and there, and they could be in very good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
So, no, looking forward to it. So I hope AA makes the right moves, that's all.
You and me both.
Take care.
All right, thank you. It'll be very, very interesting to see what sort of moves are made over the course of this offseason. I am I'm really curious about what the offseason brings. As we all should be. I don't know how they're going to sell it after the last couple of years, but wins sell, and really that's the only thing that matters. Your calls continue. Blue Jays talk to the top of the hour, but before we get to the next one, let's give a listen to the skipper, hear what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of today's 4-2 win over the Orioles.
Gibby, what'd you think of Happ's performance today and just Happ in general on the season?
Well, you know, he's really good today, you know, but he's been really good all year. I mean, I think he's really kicked it in after the All-Star break. Been very consistent. You know, and he's proven he's a pitcher that can go deep into games, you know. I mean, he's at the point now where he minimizes the pitches he throws. You know, he's starting to get ground balls, which he never used to get. So he's had a great year, he really has. And, you know, couldn't happen to a better guy. You know, he's a real pro, and he's very dedicated and works at it. And it's good to see for him.
It's always good to have some healthy competition, whether it be in spring training or in season. But do you see, with Pompey there now, almost helping guys like Pilar and Ghost kind of raise their game just because of that healthy competition between them?
No, I'll be honest, you know, they're both trying to prove something. I mean, they've always been that way. They both go at it the right way. And we'll see, you know, who knows how the outfield stacks up in the future. All three of them are very talented guys. And so who knows?
Gibby, when Happ found his way back into the rotation in May, Brandon Morrow just gotten injured and Dustin McGowan was just hanging on. If he hadn't been able to, you know, kind of grab that role and step up into the position, how do you think things would have turned out differently for this rotation?
Well, I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, you don't know who would have replaced who then. But you look at it, I don't think anybody missed a start all year that, you know, once Hap stepped in and, you know, we slotted, you know, a couple times guys back for an extra day and things like that. And Hendricks came up and pitched a couple times. But, you know, they ran the season. That's rare. But we feel pretty good about that. They all did a great job with that. They all held up for the most part and were strong. So, but, yeah, I mean, Hap was, like you said, he was kind of the swing guy anyway. He hurt his back, and then he came back and started in the bullpen. He didn't want to do that. We didn't want him to have to do that because that's really not what he is. So he ended up in the best place he could be, and you know what? He did as he responded.
John, you touched on this, but the Haps, we'd never really seen him before be able to minimize his pitches the way he was able to do it this year. What was he able to do to kind of become a different pitcher like that and become more economical?
Well, I mean, part of it, you know, we talked last year, I mean, he changed his arm angle slightly, and it was more in and out game than up and down. He'd always run into trouble. You know, he'll still throw the high fastball. That's a strikeout pitch for him, but it was up. Unless he was locked in, his release point was one of those nights. I mean, he'd be up and he'd be down in the dirt, and a lot of back and forth. And so that added his pitch count up, and, you know, you pitch up in the zone. It's kind of his style. You get a lot of foul balls. This is the way it is. So, but he dropped down just a hair, and the game became more in and out. It helped his breaking ball. And for a while there with his breaking ball, when you're right over the top, I mean, it's either going to be hanging or it's going to be bouncing most of the time, unless you're that, like I said, that perfectly release point, which is hard to do. So that helped him. And it also helps his changeup, you know. But you know what? He's worked at it. He's a very, very professional guy. And it's good to see it happen to him.
And he deserves a shot back here next year. And with a $6.7 million option, you pretty much guarantee that he's going to get it. Although, as I've suggested earlier, Jay Happ might get you the best return of the three veteran starting pitchers in the Blue Jays rotation. That's John Gibbons. I'm Mike Wilner. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We're taking your calls right up to the top of the hour on our penultimate Blue Jays talk of 2014. Cena is in Richmond Hill. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks for finally dialing it up.
Yeah, it's an interesting season. Some of the things that really stand out to me are, I think next year the bullpen's got to really figure its identity. I mean, is this the bullpen of 2013 that was really, the envy of baseball, or 2014 where it just really faltered, where it just didn't come together the way everyone had envisioned? And up the middle, I think, you know, center field, I'm not going to be sorry to see Colby go. I just don't think he's a gamer. I don't see the intensity. Don't like the body language. And second base is still a question mark. I mean, what will this be addressed in an off-season move? Will there be some, you know, changes internally? Otherwise, I think this is a team that isn't far off. I agree with a lot of callers and yourself. We're not far. Huge thumbs up on Navarro. I mean, AA deserves a lot of credit for that signing. And they got to bring back Melky. They got to. I mean, this was the real Melky Cabrera of 2014. So those are my thoughts.
Okay. I'm not going to lay it all on the bullpen as much as you seem to be doing. I think that it's had its ups and downs. And unfortunately, we saw Sergio Santos have a terrible year. Steve Delabar couldn't recapture the magic of 2012 and 13, but I do think Delabar is going to be an important piece of this bullpen next year. And relievers go up and down like crazy. And honestly, no reason to believe Steve Delabar is not going to be able to go out and be a solid reliever for the Blue Jays next year. Hopefully, Brett Cecil will be more like the Brett Cecil of the first half of last year and the second half of this year, and he may wind up being the closer. I don't know what they're going to do with Dustin McGowan. It seems to me like that's an option that you decline and try to bring him back a little bit cheaper. Aaron Loop, you know, is going to be here, but this is a bullpen that definitely is going to need some work over the offseason with Jansen leaving and Santos not coming back. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of things they come up with to address the back of the bullpen. I don't think Brandon Morrow is going to be interested in coming back here to be a reliever. I think he wants to start somewhere, and I honestly don't know where that's going to be. I wonder if Kyle Drabek has a future as a reliever, kind of a, you know, fifth or sixth guy to be at the bottom of that bullpen with Todd Redmond, but it really doesn't address the front of that pen, which is going to need addressing with Aaron Sanchez moving to the rotation and with Casey Jansen more than likely moving out of town. It's going to be a fun offseason, I hope. I hope it's going to be a very active offseason for Alex Anthopoulos. I don't know that major, major moves are necessary, though they're possible. You know, the Mariners would love to have Jose Reyes. Can something be worked out so that the Blue Jays make a deal that works in that sort of frame? As far as re-signing Melky Cabrera, all it takes is one team to get silly with money, and Melky Cabrera is gone. And I think there may be more than one team out there to do that. Ken is in Toronto. Ken, welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
Well, listen, obviously it's been a pretty awesome season, to be honest. We didn't quite get where we wanted to go, but... you know, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I think from a personnel standpoint, like you said, not a lot really needs to be done in the off season. But I think something that, I wouldn't say it gets overlooked, but I don't think it's spoken of that much is the, at least around now, is the injuries, were devastating this year. To Edwin and especially Lowry coming back after having one injury and then immediately going back on the DL. Reyes, once again, right at the beginning of the season. But I read towards the beginning of the season, might even have been just during spring training or just prior to it, an article, and I wish I could remember what it was. It was a legitimate article. It wasn't just some random rag. but that Melky and Jose Bautista had somehow adjusted their training regime down in the Dominican with a focus on longevity and health with the goal of trying to stay healthy and in the lineup for as long as possible, as you know, Melky was just coming off having that tumor in his spine. Bautista, you know, he's the past few seasons he's had his seasons cut short by various injuries. Yep. And who are two of the most reliable guys this year as far as staying healthy, was Bautista and Melky. I mean, Melky got the fractured hand earlier or later on in the season. No amount of training can really prevent that, I would think. And Bautista, I think he strained his hammy at one point, but he came back after a few days to DH and then eventually worked himself back into the right field. So what I would like to see, if possible, perhaps Lowry, Edwin Encarnacion, all these guys, doing something to the effect of, well, you know, maybe heading down to the Dominican, doing the same sort of thing, or at least the bunch of them getting together and seeing if they can, you know, tap into this exact same regime or whatever it was that had them all so healthy for so long this season. Because, I mean, Bautista's putting up numbers that maybe aren't quite as amazing as they were in 10 and 11, but he's walking more, he's obviously healthy more. Melky was phenomenal this year. Whether or not he's back with us is still up for debate. But I think that the lineup as a whole can certainly benefit from any kind of longevity from a health standpoint.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. But I don't think the answer is as apparent as you think it is. The training regimen that Bautista and Cabrera took part in the Dominican Republic, wonderful. Really, but I think if there was that magic, this is how you train so that you'll be able to play a healthy season regimen, everyone would do it, right?
Right, right.
And it would be great because, an eye on being able to be out on the field is that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter how good the team you put together is if you can't keep it on the field. And right. One of the key things for the Baltimore Orioles, as much as we talk about losing Matt Wieters and Manny Machado, Nelson Cruz, Adam Jones, and Nick Markakis all played more than 150 games this year. And I believe they've all played more than 155. And to have your key guys, well, if Markakis plays tomorrow, it'll be 155. Cruz and Jones have played 158. To have your key guys available to you all season long is just, it's huge. And for the Blue Jays, every single guy in the starting lineup has been on the disabled list this year, with the exceptions of Navarro and Bautista.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, speaking of Navarro, who knows if he's going to put up the same kind of numbers he did this year, although after the black hole we had the year before, anything is better. But I don't know. I think that any kind of health improvement would be great, and I hope that anything that's done in the offseason is done with that firmly in mind. Obviously, I'm not saying they go into the offseason not really thinking about staying healthy all year, but it certainly has been an issue for pretty much every season that I can remember for the past several years. And I don't know. That to me is the most frustrating thing, is after having, you know, such a promising season, and then have three or four substantial injuries occur right in the same time frame. That's just circumstance.
Yeah, but it's fair. And maybe Brett Laurie needs to change the way he trains, needs to change the way his body is built in order to be able to avoid those kind of obliquey things. But again, getting your hand broken is not something that you're really able to avoid, and that's happened to Brett three times over the course of his career. But maybe there is something to it. I hate to say if there was a magic pill, because there is a magic pill, but if there was a legal one, you would love to have everybody on that, because it would be great to see what this team could do if it could keep its players healthy.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks a lot, Mike. That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it a lot. The Blue Jays will have one player who played more than 140 games this year. One, Jose Bautista. And again, everyone on this team has been on the DL at some point in time this year. Every regular starting player, with the exception of Navarro, who played with a bad quad for a month, and Jose Bautista, who missed a week with a hamstring, but only a week. I'm very interested to see, and I know nobody wants to hear about injuries, I'm very interested to see how many times the Jays ran out Lind, Edwin, Reyes, Laurie, Bautista, and Cabrera, and Navarro. Those seven guys. Forget about center field and forget about second base. Revolving doors all year. But Navarro, Lind, Edwin, Reyes, Laurie, Bautista, and Cabrera. How many times all seven of them were in the lineup at the same time? I would venture to say the answer is no more than two or three. Blue Jays beat the Orioles 4-2. Dan is in St. Catharines. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk. Go right ahead.
All right, Mike, second-time caller.
All right.
Want to talk about winter ball. John Gibbons said that Ryan Goins is playing in the Dominican this winter.
That's the plan.
When I listened to Baseball Central, Kevin Barker said he used to go to winter ball all the time to get his timing down for spring training, because he had to earn a job being a part-time major leaguer. He wanted to crack the 25-man roster each spring.
Right.
If my son Brandon and I take a vacation in the Dominican Republic this winter, what kind of pitching quality is Ryan Goins going to see? Because Barker said he needs to learn to hit the fastball. Are we seeing, you know, major league X pitchers or AAA pitchers or 18-year-old prospect kids? What kind of pitching is down in the Dominican winter ball?
I think it's going to be a mix of all that stuff. I have to tell you, whether you and your son go down to the Dominican or not this winter, Ryan Goins will face the same pitching either way. But I do think it's going to be a little bit of everything. You'll have some big leaguers down there in the Dominican pitching for their home team every once in a while. You'll have the fireballer kids who have no idea where the ball's going, but they can throw in the high 90s. You'll have some minor pros who are trying to get scouts to take a look at them and trying to refine their games. I think it's going to be a very, very wide spectrum of pitching that you'll see Ryan Goins facing and everybody in the Dominican Winter League facing. It's not going to be major league caliber
right.
start to finish, but he needs reps, and that's what he needs. And he needs to get into a groove and to figure things out. And the best way to do it is when the glare's not on you and when the results don't really matter and when it's process over performance and you don't have to worry about keeping a job, you just have to worry about going out there and getting your 4 or 5 trips a day and making the most out of them.
So if Ryan Goins is going, should Anthony Gose be going? Because to me, he's in the same spot. He's fighting for a major league job, and he really doesn't have all that good of numbers at AAA. And I know you said you have to be 25 before you can kind of write a guy off. I think Ghost needs to come in firing at spring training. So should he be going to winter ball?
Certainly wouldn't hurt.
Yep.
Certainly wouldn't hurt. I think that the more reps you get, the better it'll serve you. And the same can be said for Kevin Pillar and Dalton Pompey and all those guys. Now, you don't want to turn into a 12-month-a-year player where you get worn out and burnt out.
Yep.
But it can't hurt. Absolutely.
Yeah. The only difference I would say about Kevin Pillar, the reason why I didn't mention him, and I think Gibbons said this, is that he has a track record of hitting AAA pitches. He has hit at every single level. He just needs a chance to prove it in the majors. So I'm not sure if he would benefit as much as the other two would.
I think everyone would benefit, but I think you're right about Kevin Pillar. This is a guy who has hit every level of the minor leagues where Anthony Gose and Ryan Goins have not. Yeah, that's absolutely a fair point.
So are you going to do Jay's talk from the Dominican 1 week this winter?
Sign me up. If they want to send me down, Tom Young and I will go down and spend a week in the Dominican at various all-inclusives and do Dominican League Ryan Goins games for that.
Awesome.
All right. Tom, you're in, right? Tom's in. Tom's in for a week in the Dominican doing Blue Jays talk over the course of the winter. Yeah. Tom's mulling it over right now. Yeah, see? Huh? All right. Eric in Toronto, you're next on Blue Jays talk.
Hey there, Mike. It's been good hearing you battle out with everybody all season.
Well.
quick comment, and I also got a question for you. I've been a strong proponent of Alex Anthopoulos for a few years now, for sure, and some of the big moves that he's done. But looking back after two seasons, I'm looking and I'm seeing some missed opportunities, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this. First of all, Colby Rasmus, I've been saying for 2 years now we should have traded him. Well, for some reason, his value was still high. I thought he's had no brain between his ears for the longest time, and there's no World Series team, tell me if I'm wrong, that has a dumb center fielder.
Colby Rasmus is a far, 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 far way from dumb. Don't let
base IQ-wise, fine, but baseball knowledge, he makes terrible decisions all the time, and he refuses to change his stance, or not his stance, the way that he comes on the plate. He always has the same way of going at the ball, and it's very streaky.
Yeah, I don't know. I see him tinkering all the time. So,
But do you not think that at the beginning of this season we could have gotten something along the line, maybe a fourth or fifth pitcher or something along the lines of, something that could help us out as opposed to what we got from him this year?
I don't know why you would have traded Colby Rasmus going into this season off the year he had last year with the talent that he has. I think you're looking for someone who's a clairvoyant and there was literally no reason to trade Colby Rasmus going into this season.
What about Steve Delabar? Did you think he was going to have as good of a season this year as he was as he did last year?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, that's my other thought. I mean, I guess.
But what can you get for Steve Delabar?
You could package Steve Delabar at the end of last season. You definitely could have packaged Steve Delabar with somebody else for something.
You can always package somebody with somebody for something, but you're not going to get a starting position player for Steve Delabar. You're not going to get a guy who's in your rotation for Steve Dell. You're not going to get somebody who's one of your top 20 players on your 25-man roster or top 15 for a non-closer relief pitcher, no matter how good a year he had.
Yeah, fair enough. I still think that Alex has been held back by whether it's the organization or whatever. I think that there's been some moves that could have been done that weren't, and we've been saying that all year, but there you go. My question for you is, who are you rooting for? Who's your underdog this in the playoffs?
You're assuming that I would root for an underdog.
Oh, well, oh, come on. Who roots for the Dodgers? Like, come on.
You know what? I generally will root for St. Louis. I like that organization a lot, and I've got some family roots in St. Louis.
Okay.
So I always like to see them win. Funny. When you look at the playoff teams this year, though, it's really hard not to pull for Kansas City and Pittsburgh. It's been so long for both of them that, you know, there are your true underdogs.
That's got to be good juju for us if Kansas City does well.
I don't know if that means anything, but why not?
Yeah, fair enough. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate the call. We continue our Blue Jays talk. Phone lines are open, and we're taking your calls until the top of the hour when Roger Lajoie will take over for Sportsnet tonight. We're going to step away for a little bit, but lines are open. Give us a call at 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays beat the Orioles 4-2, and Blue Jays talk continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Back here at Rogers Center, I'm Mike Wilner. It is Blue Jays Talk, and we're taking your calls at the top of the hour. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We are taking your calls to the top of the hour, and we might listen in on our Blue Jays. Tomorrow on the network pregame at about 12:45, we will hear from the Blue Jays 2014 Most Valuable Player as voted by the Blue Jays themselves. If we don't get to these interviews this evening, we will definitely have them for you tomorrow, our season finale of Blue Jays Talk, which will be an extended Blue Jays Talk all the way until 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Right now we go back to the phones. Mike is in Angus. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate your baseball knowledge. You really do a great job at the after-game show.
Swell of you. Thank you.
I work tons of hours, and I don't really get to watch too many games, so I spend most of my time listening. But anyways, I appreciate it. I just had I wanted to say one thing. I think that Hutchinson, Stroman, and Sanchez are probably the three best young pitchers that are upcoming in baseball right now. And I think a couple of years can just be, like, it can be outrageous. I think they can all be 19-game winners in the same season. Having, like, Burley and the knuckleballer.
Dickey.
Dickey. And they're on their way. They're still going to be, you know, respectable 10 and 12 and 13-game winners, but like, those young kids are just, like, Sanchez is probably one of the best pitchers I think I've seen in years. But anyways, I just wanted to ask one question. When we have the two best hitters, like the best 3-4 punch with Encarnacion and Batista,
yep,
you can't give up Cabrera. Like, he hits for too high of an average to not have him on base with all those home runs. Like, I feel like we have to give him the Sky Dome if that's what he wants. Give him the key to the city and give him whatever he wants and just sign him.
That's wonderful in the abstract, but legitimately, are you willing to give him the key to the city? Like,
yeah.
When you look at last, what sort of contract would you be prepared to give Melky Cabrera this offseason?
Well, who can you replace at an over 300?
That's not the question that I asked you.
I'd 17, 20 million. I pay lots to Rodgers already, so they can give him whatever they want. I don't even care. The only thing I feel bad is if his contract is bigger than Batista and Encarnacion, but it'll obviously create problems. But you see his morale on the team. Like, he really, really wants to win, and he really likes the people that he play with.
There are a lot of guys who really, really want to win and really like the players they play with. That doesn't help you win ball games. Production does, and Melky certainly does produce. But I always go back to Shin-Soo Chu. Shin-Soo Chu, who doesn't hit left-handed pitchers, who isn't a switch hitter, who doesn't hit for the average that Melky does, though he does get on base better. Neither of them are particular power hitters. Chu was a year older than Melky going into his free agent year last winter, and he signed a 7-year, $130 million contract.
Well, that's what people are signing those contracts now. Like, you're almost like your hand is almost forced. Like, I feel like Melky Cabrera has probably been responsible for, like, about the most amount of wins on the team, really. Like, just with being on base when runs are scored, starting a rally, taking a walk when it comes. Like, he even played exceptionally well with a tumor in his spine.
No, he didn't. He played very, very poorly with his tumor in his spine.
But
it doesn't matter. I mean, we don't expect that he's going to have another tumor in his spine or anything like that.
No, but he still hit didn't he hit 280 with the tumor?
Yeah, he had a very weak 270 with the tumor.
Oh,
it's miraculous that he was even able to do that running around like an old man.
And I knew that he would bounce back this year, and he did right away. And he just, like, he continues to amaze me. I feel like there's some players that you just have to, like, you have to eat it and hold on to them. Like, it's going to be the biggest void ever if we don't have him. Like,
I would argue that it would be a much bigger void if they don't have Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion.
Well, yeah, but those type of hitters come along once every, like, 50 years.
Okay. I admire your enthusiasm, Mike. I really, really do. I'm not willing to break the bank for Melky Cabrera.
I'm not willing
to sign him to a contract that you're going to regret 3 years into it. And it winds up being... I mean, didn't we learn enough from Carlos Delgado here when he was making so much of the Blue Jays payroll and it tied their hands to do anything
you're
else?
You're right. Damn it. I hate it when you're right.
I'm sorry. I try. I would love to have him back. I really would love to have Melky Cabrera back, but not at any cost.
It just scares me with guys like Colby Rasmus out there. Like, it's 0-2. You know the curve or the slider is coming, and he just is ready to swing. Like, I just can't take it. Like, I'm such a Blue Jays fan. My dad went to the 92 World Series. He went to the 93 World Series. I've been watching since I was 2. And I just really, really want to see them make the playoffs. I don't even care if we get bounced first round, but just to have that atmosphere of everybody rooting for them.
It will be a blast when it happens.
Yeah.
It will. I appreciate it, Mike. Signing Melky Cabrera to a $100 million contract in 6 or 7 years is not going to guarantee that. You have to at some point be prudent and smart with the contracts you hand out. And I hope that Melky winds up being affordable and that nobody comes to him with a crazy, crazy offer and the Blue Jays can be right in it. But the Blue Jays will not be one of those teams offering Melky crazy money and crazy term. They want him back. He wants to come back. Hopefully they can figure out a way to get it done. John in Toronto, you're next on Blue Jays Talk. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
All right.
All right, so I've been thinking about this the last few weeks. I like baseball. I'm a big baseball fan, but I come from a business background. And when I see Anthopoulos, I see a guy he's a GM. He's charged to win. He came into this team 5 years ago, and the cupboards were bare. He had a few assets, and so he had to go out and trade for, frankly, really expensive guys to be able to win. I mean, he Encarnacion and Bautista weren't that expensive. But they're technically from within. He took gambles on them, and it came through. Now you're seeing all these kids that are coming through the system. You know, they're cheap, they're controllable, they're wickedly talented. I don't like that people are coming down on him and be like, oh, you can't win, or we're spending too much money. we're spending too much money because there were three inept GMs before Anthopoulos, and he came in and did what he had to do to win.
I wouldn't call Pat Gillick inept.
Okay, sorry, two inept GMs. I guess my math's a little off. I would call Ricciardi inept.
I wouldn't. JP did, he put together some very good teams.
He was a scout by trade, right? He was a scout before he was a GM?
Yes.
So how come the cupboards were bare when he left? Shouldn't he be really good at that?
He felt that the best way to do things was to aim for, in the draft, for guys who were low risk,
low reward. Floor but low ceiling. Yeah, okay.
Right. Low ceiling, and it didn't work.
My point is just that I think Anthopoulos has earned himself another, I don't know, 3-4 years, because in baseball, the turnaround time on prospects is hi, you really don't know if a guy's going to turn out for a while. But we're already seeing the fruit of his drafting, his drafting bear fruit. And I just think that he's taken this team, he's done with the phase where he has to overspend for talent, and he can start making those additions to sort of round out the talent base. And I kind of want your opinion on, do you think AA has, he's earned himself at least, let's say, 3 more years on the way he's drafted, or are you willing to cut bait after the end of next year if we're still not in the playoffs?
I'm a big fan of stability. Stability in the GM's office, stability in the manager's office, stability with the coaching staff, and it's not something that we've had here. I guess we've had stability as far as the GMs are concerned. There have only been 5 in the history of the team, and the first one was only 1 year. But, you've run through 3 managers in the last 4 years, and not because Alex had a quick trigger finger. Cito retired, and John Farrell wanted out.
Right.
So you've had that turnover. But yeah, I think that when you look at the moves that Alex Anthopoulos has made, and you look at the information that everybody had at the time, most of them were roundly seen as very, very strong, and the plan seems to be pretty good, and there's no reason to bounce a guy who's doing that. And like you said, the cupboard was bare when he took over. He rebuilt the farm system to the point where he could trade some of those younger assets for some very, very helpful major league players. Hasn't worked out, but the attempts were solid, and the thinking was right, and when you've got that, that's something you hold on to.
Yeah. I look around and I see teams in other, sports. The best teams are always the ones that have long-tenured coaches and long-tenured GMs. I just think people need to calm down and take a step back and realize, frankly, how incredibly awesome a job Anthopoulos has done at rebuilding the farm system. And, if he were fired tomorrow, the next GM would be looked at as a savior, because he'd be coming into a team that's, well-off, good young talent, controllable talent. And I wish people would give the man a bit more respect for the job he's done. That's all.
Well, that'll happen if the team wins. And that's really the only way that your casual sports fan will give the guys respect. But at least if they win, it'll be more than respect. They'll view them, they'll deify them. And that's just the way sports works. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. I do. Glenn is in Brampton. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Mike.
Glenn.
Just let me start off by saying that, and this might sound like a negative point, but it's actually not. I disagree with you often. I get frustrated. I didn't like what you just said about Alex Anthopoulos, but you are the best voice on TV radio for the Jays.
So that's lovely to say. Thank you.
I look forward. I'm not sure, and I know you don't discuss your contract and your personal situation. If you're going to what your plans are for next year, if you're going to go back on the road, if you're going to call games or whatever, but TV, radio, the guys in the pregame show, everything like that, there's no one better.
Call my bosses. Let them know.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's you could easily conduct a poll, and I'm not just saying this because I disagree with a lot of things. I think it's time to let Alex Anthopoulos go, and we could disagree about this. No one's right or no one's wrong. There's arguments that could go both ways, but You could ask almost any of your listeners and people, and hopefully you could go back on the road and call games, and when the time comes, hopefully you could be the play voice of the Jays. But the main reason why I wanted to call, and I actually wanted to say that for a while, even though I do have issues. But
thank you. Matt Brown will take your address after, and we'll send you a check. So I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks, Mike. So Jose Reyes, $21 million next year?
22.
Will there be any move to try to move that? Like, will anyone accept that? Is he the Jays shortstop next year? Because he's got his strengths. He's got his weaknesses. He's clearly not worth $22 million. Whether anyone's worth $22 million, that's another issue. But what can be done there, or is he the Jays shortstop for the foreseeable future?
I think right now he is, but that's obviously subject to change. I think that I don't know if Alex will be aggressive in exploring potential trade options for Jose Reyes this offseason, but I certainly think he'll be willing to listen. I think the Mariners, as I mentioned earlier, would be interested. I think that the Rockies potentially could be interested if they move Troy Tulowitzki to the Yankees, like a lot of teams expect that they will, or at least like a lot of people expect that they will. I think that that it's a viable option for the Blue Jays to look at moving Jose Reyes. I think you would obviously need, then to replace two bats at the top of the order if Melky Cabrera doesn't come back either. And I don't think you'd pass savings from Reyes' contract on to a Melky offer, because I think you got room to make Melky a very good offer, and you'll be right in the running as long as nobody gets stupid. But, of course, we believe somebody's going to get stupid. Jose Reyes is still a very, very good offensive player for a middle infielder. We've seen that he has been a very, very poor defender up the middle this season, and you want to be better there, and you give yourself a better chance to win games if you have a shortstop who is not a minus defensively, even if the guy's a zero defensively, as long as he's not hurting you. I don't think they're going to shop him hard, but I think they'll certainly be open to listening, absolutely.
Okay, and one last thing, if I can, is biggest disappointment and sort of biggest surprise this year?
For me?
Yeah.
Biggest disappointment? Well, the disappointment is...
Just be interested, Jose Reyes is defensive player, I think, probably ranks up there. Obviously, there's been the performance of...
I knew he wasn't a good shortstop, but I certainly expected him to be better than he was this year.
Sort of the year end summary of sort of biggest disappointment, biggest surprise, or.
Oh, I'm very surprised that Stroman and Sanchez were able to be as good as they were this year. I'm disappointed by Sergio Santos. I think he's my biggest disappointment of the year by far. I expected him and Casey Jansen to be able to be a 1-2 punch at the back of the bullpen that would shorten games to 7 innings and if not, 6 and change. And Santos, with the exception of a few outings, was just awful this year. The disappointment is that Brett Lurie wasn't able to stay on the field. 70 games out of Brett Lurie is just not... It doesn't work for anybody. And as far as the surprises, again, Sanchez and Stroman, I think Deonna Navarro being able to catch more than 100 games and do a good job, a very good job. I was surprised by just how good Melky Cabrera was after a lost season last year.
I thought this was Jose Bautista's best season in terms of overall play, his outfield play, his ability to hit to other fields, his clutch play. Obviously other years he's hit many more home runs, but Jose Bautista's become an all-around player and just really, really clutch and not always going for the home run. So to me, he's the star of the team.
I don't think there's any question that he's the star of the team. I think his 2010 and 2011 would both argue with you about his best year ever, but you're right, some of the changes that he's made, the willingness to go the other way in, at certain times, that's looked really good on Jose Bautista this year, absolutely. Thank you, Glenn, for the call and for the kind words. Appreciate that a lot. Blue Jays beat the Orioles 4-2. And this is our next-to-last Blue Jays talk. We've only got one left. Sad. I was really thinking that we'd have some October Blue Jays talks and that our Blue Jay Day pregame show in the playoffs would have a lot more on-field stuff than just calling guys at home. But unfortunately, things did not work out that way. Tony is in London. Tony, welcome to Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hello, Mike.
Hello.
As you've been saying, Mike, we don't want to see the Blue Jays overpay for Melky Cabrera or anybody. However, it has been a case in almost 10 years since the Blue Jays have added a free agent that had some serious bidding. I'm thinking back to the Ricciardi era with B.J. Ryan and A.J. Burnett and maybe Benji Molina around 2005. And as you've mentioned, a name you dropped was Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah, big giant panda.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I like that idea too. But there again, that works into what I'm heading into. That how willing are the Blue Jays to go to the extreme to sign this player or any player like Sandoval? Is it an unwillingness to overspend, or is it or get into the bidding, or do the players just don't want to come to Toronto? I like the idea of Sandoval. And by the way, you're thinking of moving him to first base?
Yeah, I think Turf would eat him alive at third.
That would be the case. That's not the case in San Francisco.
No.
Where he is playing third base.
Right on grass, yes.
Right. So, is it the case where...
I think the case is that the Blue Jays aren't, at this point, aren't willing to go too deep in term on free agents. They're not going to sign anybody to a 7, 8, 9, 10-year contract. And I think that's the biggest sticking point in getting the major, major big-name free agents that are out there. And when you look at the history of such contracts, you'll find that they almost never work out. And it's good business sense not to be willing to go more than 5 years on a guy, but it also makes you miss out on a lot of guys, although you miss out on four pretty horrible years at the end of a lot of contracts.
That's true, Mike. And there is one, though, I do recall that the Blue Jays did sign him for a long term. That was and it worked out pretty good. Dave Steeb.
Yeah, a 10-year contract for Dave Steeb. A little bit different when it's only $1 million a year.
Yeah, well, it's still you got him to sign, though, and that's the idea. And maybe that's the case, as you say. Maybe is it a case of picking up someone who is at the end of one of those contracts in a deal where you don't have where you're not signing the player to that kind of deal, but to that 6-7 year contract, but someone who's nearing that last couple of years.
Well, that's what they did with Reyes.
Exactly.
Right. And now people are wanting to get rid of him just 2 years in, and with $22 million owed to him each of the next three seasons, it's not a terrible idea to want to get rid of him if you can get value in return. I think what you need to do is be more aggressive on the trade market, as Alex Anthopoulos has always been, and I think you need to get those mid-tier helpful guys that will sign for 2 or 3 years and try to improve your team that way, the Melky Cabreras of the world, if you will.
Well, they were no disrespect to Melky and DNR Navarro, because they both produced very well this year. I mean, again, you don't have to get the big name free agent, because there might be someone who is under the radar, or someone who's not everybody's chasing after. And DNR Navarro certainly came through this year. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Melky also had a big year, but that's another story.
Right. And the difference in performance between those mid-tier guys and the big-ticket guys really can often not be that much. and certainly not worth the difference in what you have to give up either in term or in contract in order to get them. I appreciate the call, Tony. Want to get to a couple of other guys before we go. Maybe just one. We'll see what our timing is like. Blue Jays beat the Orioles 4-2. This is our next to last Blue Jays talk. Tomorrow, we will Blue Jays talk it up until 6 p.m. Eastern time, our final Blue Jays talk of the year, in what promises to be a pretty short game if they can keep it to 9 innings with R.A. Dickey on the mound. Chris is in Mississauga. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
I'll keep this very, very quick because I know you're running out of time. Pat and Buck were talking last week, and of course in baseball, perhaps beyond any other sport, you can get lost in the rule book, and if you get into statistics, you can get lost in space. But they were kicking back and forth a few things, and all of a sudden they brought up a recollection of what was called the quote-unquote three-pitch inning. And Pat said, you know, there used to be a fine for that. Do you know what that's all about? I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, I think they were talking about an inning in which a pitcher throws three pitches and gets three outs. And, you know, we've seen a couple of times this season where there's been a first pitch out for the leadoff man and a first pitch out for the next guy, and then you start wondering, oh, is this going to be a three-pitch inning? And Tabby's right. They did used to fine people. If that third guy who comes up in an inning after the first two hitters have swung at the first pitch and gotten out, if the third hitter of the inning gets out on the first pitch, he's going to get fined huge because you want to give your starting pitcher a breather. You don't want an inning that takes 90 seconds and to send him back out there already. That's why if you see two first pitch outs, you'll almost always see the next hitter take a pitch or two before he even takes a swing to put a ball in play. Got to avoid those three-pitch innings, and I don't know that I've ever seen one. I've seen an immaculate inning. Steve Delabar did that last year, 9 pitches, 3 strikeouts. Brandon McCarthy had one this year for the New York Yankees, but I don't know that I've ever seen a three-pitch inning. What I did see was a 4-2 win for the Toronto Blue Jays over the Baltimore Orioles today in game number 161, and with the Yankees losing 10-4 to the Boston Red Sox, it means that the Blue Jays and Yankees are now tied for second in the American League East, and that's all the Jays have left to shoot for. Second place finish in the East and a 10-win improvement year to year, and both those things are possible if they can pick up a win tomorrow in the season finale. We're on at 12:30. The Blue Jays MVP will be revealed, and I just kind of did right there with the pregame show. R.A. Dickey against Miguel Gonzalez, 12:30 Eastern for 107 First Pitch. See you then.